Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for today's show, we will be talking about the lessons learned from relationships. So please feel free to participate or to just listen. And so let me introduce Kat. Kat, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you, David. How are you?
I'm super. Thank you. We have one caller on the line, and I recognize the number. It's Trish, and Trish will be coming to you for your input sometime into the show. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. So, Kat, where are we going to take this anyhow? Let's take it to the max.
Yeah, well, you know, relationships, you know, people want them, and then when they're in them, they don't necessarily want to be in one.
Oh.
But then when they're out of them, then they want to be back in them.
Yeah, right. What have you learned?
Well, one of the things that used to stun me was one time I was doing readings as a telephone reader, and I got a run of men, like over several days, different men, didn't know each other. And it was the same thing. Well, it looks like my relationship's on the rocks, so I'm going to just move on, and can you see if I can get someone else to sleep with?
Fine.
And I was always a bit shocked in the beginning. After a while, I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
But the focus for that kind of person was sex.
Right.
And only sex. Oh, well, I'm not going to be able to sleep with her anymore. Next. Might have been in a relationship for 10, 15, 20 years, kids, all that. So what? Just want to root someone else now. That to me is very, I don't know, there's no meaning in your life if that's the way that you're looking at relationships. You need to find purpose and meaning in your life. So, I just wanted to mention that from the beginning because that was like always a bit of a shock. But then there's other people who are the other extreme, and they're absolutely in love with love. Have you met them? They're almost to the point of being like a squishy sponge that you could squeeze with the wetness and drippingness of being in love with love.
Oh. Addicted to love, right?
Oh, yes. And that I read briefly a little bit from a psychologist about relationships, and I have to admit, I can't remember the book, the name of the book. It was a long time ago, but she coined the word limbus, which is the period in the first 6 months to 3 years where you can't get enough of each other and you're really, really into each other, and the whole world is revolving around your relationship, and, you know, you eat too much and you're really, really sort of involved. And you then go into the stage of nesting, and then you go into a stage where your relationship is tested, your friendship is tested, and then you go into a different kind of experience of love towards each other. And you can go in and out of love for each other, but you stay together for reasons that mean something. There's a meaning in your relationship, and you have a cycle of intensity and relaxation towards each other, and a building also in the sexual tension between each other. And so a long-term relationship is like that, which is more carried by friendship and a deeper meaning towards each other. But yeah, that's just two examples of relationships that I can think of. What about you, David?
Well, I was going to talk a little bit about what I've experienced in the context of relationships. I mean, we can talk about relationships with people that we choose to partner with. We can talk about relationships with our parents. We can talk about relationships with other family members. And I've learned from all of those. I will say, as far as relationships go, you know, it started out with puppy love and, you know, this heady stuff. And that followed me into my adult relationships. I've had three of them. One was a heterosexual marriage with a woman, obviously. Then I spent, yeah, right.
That's funny. That's like ringing someone up and saying, now what's your phone number?
Yeah, but you know, the thing is, I could be a woman with a very low voice, so I wanted to be clear about that.
Having a heterosexual relationship. Yes.
Well, you know, the other relationships I've had have been kind of gay. I spent 24 years with
kind
a
of.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll qualify that in a minute. I spent 24 years with a beautiful man who's going to join us later. Hopefully he won't be embarrassed that I talk about him, but he's not going to hear this unless he listens to the podcast. Anyhow, his name was Al. And then I got, and I'm going to go back and back up and tell you a little bit more about these things. Then I got involved with a man, a woman in a man's body. And I won't identify that person by name. That person who is a he to me believes he's a she in a man's body and has a female name. Now, this person, and I will back up later, but this person is 25 years younger than me. I robbed the cradle. I was at the age of 49. I'm now 65, so you can figure out we've been together for 16 years. The relationship is very rocky at present, and we've separated. And I'm not exactly sure where it's going to go because it's had a lot of toxic elements. And it started on the grounds of that heady love that you were talking about, where there was almost an instant love connection that was, in a sense, it was fantasy land. And I will say that because people know who've listened to the show that I've suffered from mental illness, have a bipolar disorder, and was manic at the point that I left him. Now, I'm going to back up. I'm going to skip the ex-wife. I'll just say that the thing about her, I have to give myself credit. I came out to her before we got married. It was just a month before, and I had support from a friend who helped me arrive at the decision to come clean. I had just made the discovery that year. And I was very nervous about it because I believed that I loved her, at least the best that I could. And a month before the wedding, I came out to her. And it's funny because I told her I had something to tell her, and she said, "What? Are you an alcoholic?" Well, I was in denial about that, too.
Yeah.
But...
Well, she was aware of you.
Well, no, the answer to that was no, not me.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I was in denial. That I didn't uncover that for 10 more years before I got honest with myself. But no, I said, "No, honey, I'm gay." And she wept, and I wept, and I said, "I felt I should give you a chance to back out. If you can't handle it, then I just don't know else to do." And we decided that we'd try it. The caveat was that she could accept me being sexual with other men as long as I didn't fall in love with one. Well, I did. So that was the end of that. She packed up a U-Haul and moved the same day she found out about that. So that was primary relationship number one. The relationship with Al was unlike most gay partners when they come together. We courted each other for a month. And back in 1980, That was so rare because gay men were jumping into bed with each other. It was before AIDS, and not giving it a second thought and then saying, oh, I love you. And that's kind of what I did with relationship number three. But remember, I was manic. I was not manic when I met Al. I courted him. We didn't really date. We formed a deep friendship. And one night he said to me, we were drunk and we were having coffee at Denny's, a kind of a fast food sit-down restaurant. And we were wide awake drunks when we walked out into the parking lot with the moon shining up above. It was so romantic. And he said to me, David, I've really enjoyed your company. I don't want this night to end. If you'd like to come back to my house for some more conversation and whatever, I wouldn't mind if something else happened. And I thought, oh, boy, I'm all for it. So that was the beginning, and we fell in love. We committed to each other to be monogamous, and unfortunately I wasn't able to keep that because of sexual addiction that kind of ruined my life for a long time. And, you know, it was a kind of relationship where there was a real connection. There was a lot of support, nurturance. We were very good listeners, both of us, and Al was a social worker, and he suggested I become one, so I gave up a sales career and did that. And I'm not going to go into that, except that, you know, the skills that we had either before or after really helped us form a basis for a relationship that was basically unconditional, although we had our issues. I'm not going to talk about Al's, but I was addicted to alcohol and didn't realize it. And Al had his issues, too. He may choose to talk about that if he comes on the show. But it came apart because I had a mania, and I left him after 24 years. Not for the new person, but I met the new person 2.5 months later, still manic. I was introduced by a friend, and the first words out of my new partner's, my soon-to-be partner's mouth were, all men are assholes. Well, I said, perhaps you've been associating with the wrong men. And he asked me for my phone number, and I thought he wanted a date. He just found me to be an interesting character. So I said, you know, if you want a date, I just broke up. I'm moving into a new house. I have all these different things going on, life changes, and I don't know what I'm going to be doing for the next few weeks, but I'm free tonight. So if you want to, you can come back to my house for lasagna, some wine, which I didn't drink, but, you know, I had some in case he liked it, and salad and whatever. So we went back to the house, and I discovered there was more to him than I thought. He was a very spiritual person. He disclosed his past, which included a lot of spirituality. He was a deacon for a liberal Catholic tradition. He lived in a monastery. He told me he'd lived as a woman and gotten hormone injections and was going to have the sex change until he was told there was only a 50% chance of sexual response, and he said, F that shit. So we came together. 5 days later, he said to me, I love you, and I said, I love you too. And a week later, I proposed to him. Even though marriage wasn't legal, we had a commitment ceremony, and that set us on a journey that became very rocky. There was a lot of toxicity in the relationship. He was a severe abuse survivor. And all of his anger and PTSD, post-traumatic stress stuff, came out and zeroed in on me. And that's essentially why we've come apart. Now, the difference in this relationship was that, as I perceived it, his love towards me was conditional, and that does not form the basis of a healthy relationship. There was a lot of blame cast at me, a lot of shame cast at me. It just was not a healthy relationship, and I was not happy. But I will say this, the one thing I'm most grateful for is that Al, who told me he would never have anything to do with me again, allowed me to pursue him, and I made my amends to him, and he accepted them and forgave me, and that's an important quality in love in a relationship, too, love and forgiveness. And so we became best friends, and all of the qualities that we had developed over the years, which continued to become even better, I'm trying to think of the word for that, but that's the essence of it. We have formed a bond so tight that it's as if we're partners, even though we're not. We're loving individuals who care deeply about each other. We care about other people. And we've done a lot of work on ourselves. And I think that's key in a relationship because a lot of us come from dysfunctional, abusive families and have our issues. Everybody has their issues. And we become codependent. We become abusive. We do all of these things that are not conducive to a healthy relationship. And so it's every person's, in my opinion, responsibility to take charge of their lives and be able to love themselves in order to form a healthy relationship. And those are my two cents, Kat. What about you?
So often a lot of people, you're talking about dysfunctional families and then coming out and as an adult and going into relationships. Often what people will do is subconsciously be attracted to a father figure or mother figure that was in their life as a young person, as a child or a youth. Now this take away the ooh, that's incestuous. Take that out because that's immature in the way that you would look at this. We were discussing this when I was on your other radio show on the weekend about the circle of security and the need to have somewhere soft to fall. So I'll just reiterate what that is. So a circle of security for those of us who are not parents is if you imagine a clock, an analog clock, and at 12 o'clock is the parent and the child. At 3 o'clock, the child feels safe and secure. Their emotional cup is filled and they run out 2, 3 o'clock on the circle and they go and play. They're still inside of their parent and they play and they can look back and see them and the parent can wave and they feel good about themselves. At 6 o'clock, they're opposite the parent. They're saying, look at me, look at me. The validation is necessary. It's actually proven psychologically and in the function of the brain and growth of the brain that the child must be looked at and acknowledged. If the child is not looked at and acknowledged, then that's going to set the child up for problems, but that's a whole other show. Then the child begins to feel like it needs its emotional cup filled and it goes to 9 o'clock. And it's coming closer and back to its parent and then back to 12 o'clock and it goes and has a cuddle and a little play with its parent, has its emotional cup filled. That circle of security becomes bigger and bigger and bigger as you grow up and you leave your parents. But you begin to need to have a soft place to fall again at some point during your adult life, and that's what a relationship does. It fills that void that you no longer have the parent to be there to look over you. You have a spouse to do so instead, and you become each other's soft place to fall. So in the beginning, we forget that we need to look for somebody who is interesting to us and has qualities that we like. We don't realize that we're actually attracted to a certain kind of person that if we broke it down, we really had a good analytical look at it, they would be similar to a parental figure in either their physical appearance or their mental experience and who they are, what they do, that sort of thing. So we go for relationships in the beginning of learning about relationships that can be toxic because of this reason, because we've not learned to let go of that parental figure. Once we do that, then we can go into a more independent mindset about relationships. And so just about everybody I know has had the big, disastrous relationship in their 20s. I certainly did. I fell in love with somebody who didn't love me, and it completely changed my life. I got guilted into staying when I really wanted to leave. And because I didn't have a sense of self-esteem, and I didn't listen to my better judgment, and I did stay, and I ended up pregnant, and then I ended up a single mother. And then that person wasn't a particularly nice co-parent at all. That whole situation sent me on 20 years of hardship. And so the choice of spouse can wreck your life or make your life. That is absolutely 100% the case. So when I look back on that, I was no longer with that first partner. I had 2.5 years of celibacy because I was a single mom and they were babies and I didn't want to have a relationship. I needed to deal with what was on my plate. And then I went into another relationship with somebody who was controlling in this insidious way. And again, I did not have good self-esteem. And I, even though I had adult issues on my plate, I felt very lost. There were a lot of things that had been taken away from me, and people who had been actively discouraging me from pursuing my career, things like that. Which significant people in my life, which caused me to not know who I was and where I was going. And this person turned up and I had a relationship with him which I regretted, and that made me have a 6-year period of celibacy where I just said, no, I don't want any of this. And then, you know, at some point you need to say to yourself, well, you don't have to have relationships. Some people don't. I didn't for a long time. I don't count that relationship as a spousal relationship. And so I say that I had 11 years on my own before I met my current partner, because I never lived with that man and I never wanted to. So he wasn't a spouse, he was just a boyfriend. What I learned, you know, so many different things. I learned to stand up for myself. I learned to find my inner strength, my power. I learned to say what I wanted. Because I shared children with the first one, I continued to have a weird estrangement relationship with him where I had to co-parent at some level. And during that time, I really learned to tell him what I thought of him, which was difficult in the beginning because I was very afraid of emotions and that had other people's emotions, and that had to do with the way that I was raised. And that fear of other people's emotions has been a big block in my life, and one that I've had to really work through. And I'm an INFJ personality type on the Myers-Briggs scale, so I feel and know what people are thinking. So, and it can be very painful. Because it's not, it's a whole body feeling of what they're thinking. So when I say that I'm afraid, well, not now, but when I was younger, I was afraid of other people's emotions, that I had good reason to be because of the way that I am. So I learned to set that those fears aside. But I also learned that the kinds of people that were taking advantage of me, because I had a kind heart and because I did not feel that I was worthy or good enough, and that I struggled to stand up for myself because of those reasons. So, I wouldn't have the level of assertion I have now if I didn't go through those relationships. And I wouldn't have got to the point in my relationship where when we hit the rocks, the relationship I'm in now, as every long-term relationship hits a rocky period, when I turned around and said, these are my deal breakers, you cross them, it's over. And I set those boundaries and he set his, and we then were able to move forward from there. So I don't know if any of that makes sense, but relationships for me, in romantic relationships, are the biggest teachers that you have. Friendships teach you a lot. Parent-child relationships teach you a lot. Other relationships with teachers and bosses and co-workers and all of that do teach you a lot. But because there's a level of intimacy with a sexual relationship that there is not present in any other kind of relationship, it's an absolutely vulnerable experience, because you're in bed sleeping next to that person. You're naked with that person. And not just physically naked, you're mentally and emotionally naked with that person. So you have no choice but to grow. And if you don't grow, you'll get crushed. Mm. So you better damn well grow.
Kat, we have another person that's joined us. And your sharing has made me aware that I did not talk a lot about what I've learned, and I'd like to briefly do that and then go to the phone lines, if you're okay with that.
Yeah.
And I also wondered if you'd be okay, because we may indeed have three callers, and depending on how much they want to share, are you able to go a little bit over the hour mark?
Yes.
Okay. So what I've learned is how to love myself. And I had very little self-esteem, and today I have a lot of self-esteem. And I like what you said about learning to assert yourself, because that was something I didn't know how to do. I was a people pleaser, and today I've learned to please myself, that I'm number one, and that's not to say that I'm selfish. I'm actually selfless, because I know that in order to fill somebody else up, I have to be filled up in the first place. It's like that old metaphor of, if you're on an airplane and you lose pressure, you have to put on your oxygen first before you put it on somebody else. I've had a wonderful support system. I'm sure some people know exactly who they are, and I'm not going to embarrass them. But, you mentioned friendships, and we can't choose our families, at least seemingly not. I mean, I believe we do choose our relationships and our families to learn from previous lifetimes. But it seems that we can't choose our families, but we can create our own families. And quite often, we become sisters and brothers to each other with our friends. And that's a wonderful thing. And so I've learned the value of friendship. And I think that's an important ingredient in a relationship. I think it's the best way to start one. And I think that unless you can remain friends and be kind to one another, you don't have a satisfying or functional or healthy relationship. That's my opinion. So, today I'm proud to be who I am. I love myself, as I've said. And I'm at a point in my life where I don't care if I have another partner, should my current marriage end in divorce. However, I'm not closing the door. I'm open, and that's something else that I've learned from relationships, the importance of being open and honest. And I must say that for many years I was not that. And I learned to let go of shame because shame is toxic, however it comes at you, but especially if it's internal shame. And so today I shed my shame. If I feel guilty about something that I can correct, I make amends. And I'm moving towards a healthier self, and I trust that I will be learning the rest of my lifetime because everything, including relationships, are learning opportunities. And they don't have to be problems. They don't have to be challenges. They're simply situations that we can learn from and grow. And that, I believe, is what life is all about. So I'd like to go to the phone lines. And, Kat, if we have time, I'd love to hear more from you. I'm going to go first to Trish, and we also have a caller from area code 607. If you're interested in participating, I'll come to you after Trish.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for asking for my input. I was raised in a dysfunctional family, and so I've had two long-term relationships, and I didn't listen to myself, so they didn't go well. And the people that I was telling, my family that I was telling about the issues we were kind of sticking up for my partner. So I stayed in these relationships for way too long when they should have ended. And as you mentioned, Kat, these two men reminded me of my father, one totally irresponsible and the other one irresponsible and mean. I was able to extricate myself out of the last one, which was the mean one. And so I've been living alone, and I didn't have any self-worth coming out of my family. And I think I'm in a much better place as far as that's concerned. And I do listen to myself now. I've been seeing this man for a year, and we were getting very close, but he wasn't able to speak about his feelings. I mean, he couldn't tell me anything about his feelings. He couldn't really talk about his feelings at all. And that's something that I require. So I told him that, and I backed off about 6 months ago. I know he cares for me, but he can't tell me. And so we've just gone on as friends, and he came over tonight, and we're still seeing each other as friends, and it was his birthday, and I don't know. I was upset about something because my cat's very ill, and I probably have to put him down soon. And he wasn't comforting me at all, not expressing. I know he does care. But, when you were saying it reminds you of your parents, that's kind of how my mother was. So it's painful when you're in these relationships with people that aren't able to reciprocate. So at least I'm able to recognize it and hopefully go forward to something better in the future. So thanks for listening.
Thanks for sharing, Trish. And I like the fact that you're very to the point person. I kind of went on and on, and I needed to do that tonight. But I appreciate you calling into the show and listening, and I appreciate your input, and I hope that you find exactly what you're looking for, because you sound like the kind of person that's worked on herself, and I know you have, because I know you.
mm-hmm.
And it's amazing how we attract whatever it is that we put out. And you put out love, you put out compassion, you put out strength and hope and wisdom, and I trust that will come to you someday. And I wish you the best, and thanks again. Love you.
Thank you, David. Love you, too.
Okay, we're going to go to area code 607 and see if you want to participate. What is your first name, please?
Nicole.
Nicole, hi there. Thank you for calling in tonight. Is there anything you'd like to share about lessons learned from relationships or share anything about relationships?
Now, is this lady psychic?
No, actually, Kat is a medium, but on this show, she we talk about topics, and
yeah.
she is available to do that, and we can give you her information because she's a very talented medium. She's also a spirit life coach, and she comes at her mediumship and helps people at crossroads in their lives. That's one of her specialties. But Kat, would you like to share your information with her?
Today we're not doing readings, but you can contact me on Facebook at Kat Edwards, Life Coach and Spiritual Professional. Kat is spelt with a C.
I can tell you some things about relationships, though.
Great. Would love to hear
sure.
from you.
I have not had a relationship in, like, many years. But I'm so in love with, like, so many people at the same time. It makes me love myself all that much more. And, I've changed as a person since I've met all these people. And I love them all. And there's, like, one or two I love a little more than the rest, you know.
What have you learned from your relationships, Nicole?
Still learning.
Ah, yes. Yeah, that's the nature of life and relationships, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
What do you guys think about men being married? No, never mind, I'm sorry. I shouldn't ask that question.
Go for it. There's no question that's not worthy.
Oh, whenever I talk about this crush I have on Taj, my mom says, he's a married man. And I'm like, well, he's going out with a bunch of different girls. And he's a married man, and I want him to go out with me.
Well, that happens a lot, and I'm not going to cast any judgment on that. I'm a married man, and I have entered into other relationships, and for me, that has not been a particularly healthy thing, but it's a learning opportunity, certainly. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely learning opportunity.
Is this is something you want to pursue? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but, you know, I want to tell you that, okay, this is what I've learned. Now, people may tell you, oh, if they really love you, they'll love you just the way you are. But you can't be like 600 pounds or 500 pounds or 400 pounds or 300 pounds and just expect when you have a crush on that it's skinny to just think, oh, yeah, we should definitely get naked together. You know, they don't want to. You have to lose weight. If you want to be attracted to the one that you want, if you want the one you want you, you have to work on yourself, too.
Certainly physical attraction is a big part of how we come together, and I like what you just said about how you have to work on yourself. What kinds of things what advice would you give to people?
If you have a crush on that one and you'll just never let them go, then you better go lose weight. You better change. He doesn't want that.
Oh. Well, that's a tough situation to be in, isn't it?
Or you can just decide it's too hard and you can give up on that dream. But I won't give up on my dream.
Dreams are important.
Yep.
Do you think you would be happy in this kind of relationship?
What, him and me?
Yeah.
I have to lose weight. He gave me a certain
okay.
weight that I have to weigh to be
mm-hmm.
close enough to him, and it seems
well,
like I just...
Real... Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
Seems like I just... I even bought an exercise bike, and I usually went to the gym at the center, but... And I worked hard. I worked for 2 hours a day on that bike to lose a pound a day. But it gets slower and slower, and you get a little sluggish. You don't want to do it anymore. The home bike is not being used because it's just way too hard.
Well, I certainly appreciate you sharing. Do you have any final words before we move on?
I love Tosh.
I'm sorry?
I love Tosh.
Ah, yes.
That's all.
Love is a powerful thing. Well, thank you for sharing. And just to let you and the other listeners know, next week we're going to talk about taking responsibility for our lives. And really one of the things we want to address is what causes people to seek advice from readers and mental health professionals without acting upon their suggestions, and then go back to advise, oh my God, I can't even read my own writing. Kat, you wanna do the subtitle for me?
Oh gosh. So taking personal responsibility, doing the work on yourself. And we're looking at why people continue to go back to therapists, readers, and counselors and talk about their issues, but they questions about them, seek advice, and then do nothing with that. And I expect that the professional in front of them will fix their lives instead of taking responsibility to fix their own lives. So that, I think that's the crux of the show.
I now can read my own writing. Thanks for filling that in.
Yep, that's right.
Well, Nicole, thank you again for joining us, and please feel free to continue to listen.
All right.
So, Kat, you had some things to say earlier in the show that I thought were very interesting, especially that idea about seeking people that are reminiscent of our parents or that have issues that perhaps we need to work on because of dysfunction in our families. And, you know, it's said that water rises to its own level. And so we naturally seek what we're used to, right?
Yes, absolutely. And in the case of somebody who's seeking a relationship with somebody who's already betrothed, it cannot be a fully beautiful, wonderful, free relationship because there is the other person there and you are... effectively the third wheel, and you'll never really truly have the freedom that you need. So it becomes a dirty relationship. And in that case,
Kat, are you still there? We seem to have lost her, and I'd love to hear what she wanted to say. Let me just try ringing her up. Let's see here. Hold on, folks. We'll get her. So you were saying, Kat.
Yeah, sorry about that. My phone rang and I thought that I ended the person who was ringing. but I accidentally answered it instead, so I apologize.
No problem.
Now I've got to remember where I was at. Yeah, so an affair is, for the person who is in love with the betrothed, the affair is dirty and painful and not worth it. For the person who's betrothed, the affair is a web of lies spun around the other lover and to push their partner away. And it's often a symptom of something going wrong in the relationship. That's why the affair happens. There's something going wrong within the person who is seeking a lover outside of their relationship, or something wrong within their relationship. And of course, there's a lot of anger in society towards affairs and people who have affairs and people who are the other woman or the other man, because it's not seen as morally right and just. But the fact is that it happens, and instead of beating yourself up about it, I wouldn't encourage it at all. If you are in a relationship with somebody and you want to have an extramarital affair, it would be wiser to turn around to your partner and say, I would like to see other people, mm-hmm. and make it clean, than to go ahead and have that extramarital affair and cause a massive, yucky, worse situation. You're going to cause a bad situation anyway. Don't make it worse. But if you're somebody who's actively seeking a relationship with someone who is betrothed and is known to be somebody who is a womanizer, you are not going to have a wonderful relationship. It is not going to be the big love dream that you hope for. That person is not emotionally available. They will use you. It is about them.
I think so. Go ahead.
I just be aware. You know, I did, this last caller was mentioned that she knew this guy slept around, and she knew he was married, and she still wanted to go out with him. She's setting herself up for pain.
I think that is the underlying fact that can create more pain for somebody, because a lot of times people that cheat will say, oh, I'm going to leave my wife to kind of hook you. And most people that do cheat would cheat on you as well, because they have an issue with fidelity. And it usually is a serial issue. I can speak from my own experience that I was unable to maintain monogamy with either of my partners, though I worked at it. And what I did is I joined a 12-step program that addressed this issue, and I did therapy, and I found recovery, but it did not come easily, because there was a hole inside myself that I was trying to fill up with people, places, and things, and I filled it up with extramarital affairs, and they did not make me feel good. They made me feel shitty. And I have had the experience of having somebody fall in love with me with whom I'd had an extramarital affair, and I cut them off right at the very root. I left. And there was one instance where I was having an affair with a man who fell in love with me, and he asked me to bring him roses for Valentine's Day. And I thought to myself, the only person I bring roses to is my partner. And so I left him. And so, you know, you can set yourself up for a lot of hurt in those instances. And I think unless somebody is willing to get honest and work on themselves and commit, that it is only a setup for heartache.
Yeah, it is. It's not worth it. It's a dirty relationship. No, you can kid yourself all you like. That is what it is. it's a dirty relationship. So you're just better off to walk away no matter how tempting it is and just say, I'm worth more than this. Come back when you're single. And or I'll seek you out when I'm single. I need to, like you did, go and seek advice and therapy and work it out. But you were not emotionally available to that person who fell in love with you.
No, no.
And, you and I have had full lives and certainly not standing in judgment of other people because our lives have been full. So I come at this from a compassionate perspective because we learn and we grow, do we not? And this is what relationships cause us to do. They cause us to learn and grow. But don't put yourself into a horrible situation. Delude yourself that a married person who you know sleeps around is going to pick you. Then the only person they're picking is themselves. Until they worked it out. And then you went and said, there's a common denominator in all the pain here, and that's me, I'm doing something about it. And that was a mature decision. And all along, with all the things that you've done and all the sort of brick walls that you've hit, you've turned around and looked at yourself and said, I need to learn and grow, I'm going to seek help. And that's a maturity that a lot of people don't experience.
I think the other piece of that is that you can't lead a spiritually sound life when you're being untrue to yourself. And for me, it all boiled down to what has been talked about before, and that is lack of self-esteem. It's a setup for doing things that go against your moral values, and it's a setup for feeling shitty about yourself, reinforcing it, giving you ammunition to beat yourself up and to judge yourself. And nobody should do that. And the flip side of the coin is that, the point is everybody needs to work on themselves, and there's so many avenues for that. Sometimes it can be as informal as talking to a friend who knows us and can give us helpful feedback. I don't generally like people to give me unsolicited advice, but if somebody's bringing up a topic, then they're seeking help. And so I think that is not an instance of unsolicited advice. We all yearn to be free, and we all are seeking love. And true love has no conditions attached to it. It offers itself freely, and it's a beautiful thing when you can find it. But I think that in order to find it, you have to experience some healing within yourself. And so reach out for help. We're not in it alone. You know, we're all connected at a basic level. We're all one. And so why be a fragment when you can be part of the whole? You know, let your fragment join the mosaic of human experience and become whole, you know. We're all broken at some level, but we can recover our true selves, our spirits, and mend our hearts. What do you think, Kat?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, just talking about relationships in general, if we're going into that path, you can feel like you've lost yourself in a relationship. You don't know who you are anymore. You can feel completely broken when you come out of a relationship. And if you have children or you share animals with that other person, you can go through horrible custody battles and settlements. And I know of people who've gone through 10-year court battles, and you know, just their children have lost their childhood to their parents fighting. And in the end, saving face or choosing happiness, which one do you want? who has to be right. You know, all of these things are there. You know, revenge is a big pain at the end of a relationship. For some reason, people feel that they have to attack, hurt, and maim the other person. And that is because you have exposed yourself and been vulnerable. And now there is a sense of betrayal to that vulnerability, so you must hurt them and hurt them in their vulnerable, soft underbelly. And, you know, that doesn't work. There's some of the things in society which are perpetuated by the media, by TV shows, and that is that when you break up, you have to hate each other. Well, you and Al are an example of that's not true. When you break up, you have to hurt each other. You have to seek revenge on each other. That's just ridiculous. You don't have to do that. You can stand up for yourself and stand up for your rights, but there's no need to make it into a long, drawn-out, horrible experience. When you break up, you have to seek ways of destroying that other person's life in reputation or something like that. And none of this is a mature way of being. If we are in a mature way of being, then we'll live and let live, and we'll thank that person as much as they might have been a bastard or a bitch. We'll thank that person for the lessons that we've learned, and we'll grow, and we'll seek happiness and seek a path forward that works for everybody. If you have no children together, then you separate yourself, disentangle yourself financially, and move forward. But the worst thing that you can do is bed hop, in my opinion. And, of course, I haven't done that in my lifetime because I know so many people who had and constantly were going from one bad relationship to the next. So I thought, well, I'm not going to do that. You need time to heal after a relationship because it is a big wound. That vulnerability has been exposed and you have had it exposed and then hurt. So there's a wound that needs to be healed. If you roll straight back into bed with somebody else, you're not healing the wound from the last person. You're, in fact, reinfecting that wound again and again and again. When you pull yourself away and you say, I'm having time out from this, then you can be really, you can be in touch with yourself and you can begin to have a clearer view of who you are and what you do and don't want in a relationship. And I know that you've gone through quite a difficult time in navigating that, David. So, I mean, as I said, I'm not talking from my experience, but from my observational experience. But you did roll from relationship to relationship there for a little while. Did you find that you needed to have that time to heal and you never did it?
I absolutely did, but what I'm saying about my life now is that I am doing it.
And, yeah.
You know, it's so important to becoming true to myself. That's what it boils down to thine own self be true. And when I have not done that, I've not felt very good about myself. And the one other thing I wanted to say about relationships, no matter what form they take, is that we are all students to one another as well as teachers. And we can learn, as has been said, every step of the way if we open ourselves to that possibility. And we've come to the end of the hour. I would invite people to check us out on Facebook, The Healing Circle with David Clark and Kat Edwards. Create a post, like us, suggest a topic for the show, express your feelings about the show that you've listened to. that. And Kat, as always, thank you. And thank you, Nicole and Trish, for sticking in there with us. I hope that what we've shared tonight, all four of us, has been illuminating to other listeners on the show. And Kat, you're a joy to work with.
Oh, as are you, David, and thanks so much to everyone who tuned in and for the people that called in. Your contribution was extremely valuable. Thank you.
And join us next week at the same day and time to discuss the lessons from relationships and what we can do to learn the lesson and follow through with whatever suggestions that are offered to us, because without doing that, the lesson's never truly learned. So thank you and good night.
Good night, everyone.